This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Mudiwa Kavaz is in studio with our weekly tech wrap. Mudiwa, hello.
Good evening, Nortando.
Thank you so much for being with us this evening, Mudiwa. It's a pleasure having you in studio. How are you?
Alive, good, well, and thriving.
Yeah, we know. All right, Mudiwa, let's get right into it. It's been an interesting week in your sector. Not as interesting as it can be,
but
interesting nonetheless. Let's start off with the one that we've been discussing endlessly over the last few weeks. That's because every week there's a new thing.
Mm.
Today, Canal Plus went and upped its shareholding in MultiChoice.
Big time.
To 40%. It's quite a number.
Yeah.
What happened?
So it's one of the things that, you know, I've been tracking. I remember when I was doing the analysis earlier today, it was quite interesting just to see the, what you call this, the jumps. I'm going to try and remember it off, you know, the top of my head. Mm-hmm. But you have early October 2020, they come in at 6.5%. By the end of that same month, they're now sitting at 12%. So they almost doubled it within a month. Then you sort of go through 2021. Not too much is going on. They're still buying, but at a slower rate.
Okay.
You get to March 2022. They're sitting at just over 18%, right? There's one or two milestones that I can't remember exactly where they fall. But a year later, they are just above 30%. Right. So aggressive buying through 2022 into 2023. Then we, you know, sort of hit this lull period where there isn't too much going on. And then, you know, by the time we get to February, you know, this year, they're at 33%.
Okay.
So within a year, they had grown another 2.5 to 3%.
Okay.
Right. So they continued to buy, but it was at a slower pace. The biggest jump, you know, sort of happened, I would say, between 2022 and 2023, because that's when they went from 18% to 30%.
Okay.
Right. So that was a huge, what you call this, that was a huge jump. Now, a day later, we're 33%. A day later, 35%. Start of this week, we're just under 37%. Mm-hmm. And now at the end of the week, we are at just over 40%. So, yeah, it's been a story.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on our side, the indication is that there are sellers in the market that are looking at current levels as being decent enough levels that they can exit at. So it is an interesting one. And at this pace, I won't say the writing is on the wall yet, because 10% is still a relatively big chunk, you know, to get, because once you get to that 50 plus 1%, it's a wrap.
It's yours.
It's going to be interesting to see how this stuff happens. But they continue to buy. And interestingly, I asked, Maxim Saada, who is the CEO, last week. I was like, who are you buying from? Because is there that much free float in the market? And at least the answer he gave to me was that, yes, there is. We think that we're buying just free float from the market. Because in his view, the other major shareholders, think the likes of M&G, think the likes of the PIC, hadn't had any moves in terms of their stakes. So he was just like, if you look at the big guys, those guys haven't changed. So it's probably smaller guys that are looking at the current levels and thinking, good time to exit. And, you know, this is all the liquidity that Canal Plus is just scooping up in the market. Yeah, the buying activity is crazy.
It is. I must ask you also, Madhya, if two companies, which MultiChoice and Canal Plus are right now, they're in conversation about a possible acquisition or merger, whatever they're calling it.
Yeah, a combination.
Let's call it that. Consolidation of sorts.
Yeah.
But then what does it mean for MultiChoice or for Canal Plus to keep buying MultiChoice shares on the free market? They'd be able to get them anyway. I guess it's a little bit of a discount because they're not trading at the 125. That's the offer price on the table.
Yeah, but remember that people hold on to or buy shares for different reasons, especially your asset and fund managers. yes, the price is one consideration. But I was talking to another fund manager recently who spoke about, that they had sold out, of some of their holding when it came to MultiChoice, because one of the reasons they liked MultiChoice to begin with was dividends. Mm. You know, it was a good way, you know, it was providing cash flow, you know, for them. But in the last maybe year or two, it hasn't been, it hasn't been declaring any. And right now, you're not too sure of what the future prospects are. So at the current levels, they, in their view, they were like, this share has probably reached fair value. It's not paying us the dividend that we're expecting. We're out. So there are other considerations. We always keep looking at the price, but there are other considerations, and you know, the dividend story is, you know, one of those one of those reasons that people have for exiting the share.
Let's talk about our next one now. Uber opening up for teens and people below 18. No.
Did you know that you can't have an Uber account if you're below the age of 18?
I didn't know, and I can see why that's I can see why that's the case, and I prefer to stay the case. But let's hear what they think.
So up until now, if you are a parent or a guardian and you want to move or transport a minor on Uber, you sort of do the manual thing where you request a ride, and then your kid gets onto the ride, and then they go to their destination. That is still, in essence, the process. But what they have changed is the fact that you can now register. They're calling them family accounts. Mm-hmm. So think about profiles on streaming. Mm-hmm. So in essence, you can now register a profile for your child underneath your account, mm-hmm. right? And all it means is, instead of you always requesting rides for your child now has this stripped-down profile that allows them to request rides on their own. But all the activity that's happening in that account is basically you as the guardian or the parent, it's your activity. So the credit card, all of that stuff, it's still your credit card that's paying for this. You are getting, you know, if it's your child, Nolitanda, you are getting the notification every time your child does something on the app.
I feel like you're trying to convince me, because you can see my face. Because I'm not having it, but go on, Medea. Go on.
Every time your child does something on the app, you are getting a notification. You are getting a notification, and you are getting a sense of what's going on in that, in terms of your child. You get the light. What I thought was cool is this whole thing, it's about, yes, it's the convenience, but the other thing is the fact that I was also looking at the business side. Mm. It's a good way to at least get someone in young, because past the age of 18, they can then migrate into a full profile, right? So you sort of entrench that culture, you know, in a person, because they've opened this up for kids that are between the ages of 13 to 17. So you sort of get someone into that culture of Ubering, and then, you know, once they become an adult, they can migrate. They now have their own account. That's the second thing. And then I think just the last one, the ride-hailing sites haven't had a good reputation, you know, some of them at least, when it comes to the safety record. And this is, you know, part of their efforts, you know, to try and address some of those things. Rider verification, you can't start like with teens, for example, you have to have these pins. They have audio recordings that are automatic. They have a lot of protections that they've put in place to at least give parents some time to try and ease, parents, because parents are doing this thing anyway. Mm. But let's at least make it a standalone so that you have, you know, greater protections, so to say.
So how do you know, Medea, that I am a woman in South Africa? I'm going to tell you about all the things that are making me say, oh, hell no.
Okay, cool.
And maybe from a business perspective, I can completely make sense from it. But from a consumer perspective, the way that I think about it is, as soon as the child profile shows up on the Uber driver's app, now he can plan for my child. Now he can plan his kidnapping very accurately. You know what I'm saying? So that's a big thing, that you give a person time to plan and plot. Yeah. But also, I think, just as a woman in South Africa, and every time I enter an Uber, with all the stuff, the pins and the optional voice recording and everything that can happen, it's still a bit of a risk for me. Mm. And I just can't imagine normalizing it for a child. I can see that parents are doing it. And look, I'm sure there's parents who just don't have the anxieties that I may have. But from a South African perspective, oh, hell no.
I definitely hear you, you know, on those particular fronts. Once again, I don't work for Uber, so I'm not here to advocate for their
services.
You know, for their services. But they have thought about a number of these things. So, for example, they only have highly rated drivers that are able to accept. They only have drivers that have a certain amount of tenure. Like, for example, you can't be someone who's fresh on the platform and be allowed to accept a ride from a minor. Mm-hmm. They've built in those some of those protections. The other thing I'm trying to remember the other aspect that they spoke about. Yes. Interestingly enough, there was a lady, because there was a launch event yesterday, and there was a lady yesterday, and she actually said, is there a way that we could possibly, and I thought it was an interesting idea, and they probably will have to develop it. They were like, is there a way that as a parent, I can choose that I only want my child to be picked up by female drivers?
Hmm.
You know, for example.
Hmm.
They don't have that, in place. I think they're now thinking about it. But I actually thought, that was an interesting thought to say, yeah, as some of the protections, you know, maybe that might be a way. I don't know what you think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether it completely gets rid of the risk. But to some people's minds, it's better to have a female driver than to have a male driver.
I don't know. I think, women collude with criminals all the time. Anyway. I'm just not having it with you. I'm just like, absolutely not. I want my, I want it just better than that, I guess. But I just can see why they would go from it from a business perspective. And you know what? It might even, for many households, create such a great riding and e-hailing habit in the household for young people that parents don't even have to buy cars, because your kids are not even thinking about renting a car. So what do you mean? We Uber here. We go up and down, and you know that might be something that's of a benefit, but no.
you're not there.
I'm just not there with you. It's not, okay, I don't cool. think it's something that I would go for, but you know, maybe ask me one day when I have children and I'm there 18 and I'm trying to figure myself out. But no, for now, just not safe enough in South Africa, and I think it will work in places where the safety of children is not. It's not an issue. In South Africa, it's just too much of one.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of the most, and there was another question that was brought up around that, because this Uber Teens thing, because they're calling it Uber Teen accounts, they've been rolling it out in different parts of the world. So you'll see that a lot of the communication or a lot of the material, videos, that type of promo stuff is actually United States-based stuff. But South Africa has exported certain ideas that have, you know, come out of Uber South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether I can say, fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of it has to do with safety, you know, safety and risk, especially emergency response.
Interesting.
Because there aren't a lot of markets where Uber's offering an emergency response option. The Blue Shield, if you've ever been on the, what you call this, on the Uber app, there's a Blue Shield that you press and emergency response, you know, gets access to your location and they're there. They were telling us yesterday that their average, you know, arrival, you know, to wherever the car is about 6 minutes. And they're like, this is something that doesn't really exist anywhere else, because police takes much longer to arrive, but you need emergency response. So I guess to your point, it's a real thing that safety and health, you know, when it comes to ride hailing, South Africa as a whole does not have a good record. And you have a company like Uber coming up with things like emergency response services, which has not been a thing that they have had to roll out anywhere else, really, but in this country, and they take the idea elsewhere, which sort of shows you from a macro point of view, it's tough.
It is tough.
It's tough.
It is very, very tough.
Mm.
Let's move on now and talk about a Conducive Capital and the founder. They're outlining a plan for a 1 billion rand fund. That's not small change.
Not small change, but it's about $50 million. Mm-hmm. You know, very interesting. You've got the founder of Kellon Capital, Kellon. It should be Kellon Venture Partners, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the founders of Ozo. The two of them have come together. What I found most interesting about this is what their aim is. Mm. Their aim isn't necessarily to invest into companies, because both of them have tech backgrounds, but it's to invest in, because it's sort of like how, you know, like how, let's say pension funds and asset managers, that relationship, right? To say you have a pension fund, but, you know, your portfolios are being run by, let's say, a set of asset managers. Yeah. So in the same way, they're creating this fund, but they're going to be deploying their capital through a series of smaller venture capital firms, okay. Right? And specifically, they want them to be black female-led venture funds. And they've earmarked to say that we're looking at 5 to 10 at most that we're going to do, because whether we like it or not, venture capital in South Africa does have leanings in certain directions.
No, it is fact. Don't you're not just sugarcoat it here, but you're in the same space.
Yeah,
it's white and it's male.
Yes, and black. Yeah, I was about to say black female is not your typical flavor of venture capital in the country. So they've actually said this is what they're trying to do. Mm. I think it's a noble cause. What I not struggle, but what I'm really keen to see is where they're going to get some of these VCs, because chances are, and we did speak about this. I had a session with them sometime last week, and they said that they're probably going to have to get a couple of these people to draw them out of corporates, because these are some of the people that are running ESD programs, people that you know, are doing fund management inside a corporate. But how do you entice someone to come out of, you know, some of these larger institutions and get into that VC space? Because you need a certain set of skills, you know, to be able to allocate capital, you know, efficiently. Because at the end of the day, it's capital allocation that's coming from similar sources, but you're just deploying it in a different way. Because in South Africa, the main sources of funding is the banks, in a lot of cases. And South Africa has actually been, I don't know if I can call it criticized, but South Africa is not the market where you're going to throw money and let an Amazon go for 10 years without making any money. Yes. No. Yeah, in South Africa, they want returns. Like, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right? And a lot of it comes from the fact that you've got institutional funding as being the source of those funds. And those institutional investors take an institutional mindset. They expect institutional type of returns and whatever that you're doing. So you're best placed with people that have some type of experience, you know, dealing with institutional money. And hopefully over time we can change, or at least start to change, the complexion of VCs in South Africa. I enjoy what your face does in these conversations.
Because we have them very often. Well, I'll tell you this, if you want black women to run funds, give them autonomy, give them money, and make the work that they do genuinely impactful. I think that's one of the things. Sometimes when it's not your capital that you deploy, then it obviously first of all comes with a lot of terms and conditions. I think if you want black women to run your funds, you need to allow them to set the values that those funds will move along with, and you just give them the freedom to make real investment decisions without having too many strings attached, or without being too hard on them. I think it really is that simple. There's many actually black women, and I say this because I know enough within corporates who are looking for impactful things to do with their lives. Not saying that corporate is impactful, but I mean, you know, we've been there. And so you do get to a point where you might want to do something big and wild, and VC could be it. But it has to tick the boxes, because another thing is corporate does give you a certain level of security. And I don't think, you know, lots of women are willing to do away with that security for obvious reasons. But I think for a lot of it, if you want black women to lead stuff, give them the space to show up as black women and nothing else.
I definitely get you there. And at least What has been communicated to me is that that's, you know, the direction that they're trying to go in. I think on my side, I would also call out the fact that in South Africa, perhaps you can correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. but where else or how else would 10 black female VCs be able to each go and get 100 million rand?
Nowhere else. Nowhere else in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally nowhere else in the world.
Yeah, I think that thing needs to change.
Yeah, it does. So, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm very interested in this, so I'll be watching. I'll be engaging.
Would you put your hand up?
Of course I would. You know, we've had these conversations. We've had these conversations offline with you that, of course, the color of venture capital, we spoke about this a lot in South Africa. Where is the money going? Where is it coming from? Mm. Why are we not seeing enough young people, black people, women people getting this funding? And so, yeah, interesting stuff.
The one thing I will add to this is the fact that even with this fund and even the sort of developmental type of agenda that they are driving through the fund, the one part which is a bit tough, but I understand their position because we did speak about this, is the returns factor that we're talking about. Because once again, we have another fund that is investing in businesses that are that have already got some measure of traction, mm-hmm. That are, you know, growing. They have some specific words. I wish I had the press release, you know, where they're looking for companies that are already making revenue, already have, you know, product in the market, all of that stuff. And when you talk to a lot of business owners, founders, you know, at least in the really small ones, one of the things that they're really hungry for is, listen, I'm looking for like proper startup capital.
Yeah,
pre-seed. I'm actually like to get the thing
ideas here.
Off, yes,
but I need to, need it to
ground.
Move. Yeah,
off the ground. And unfortunately, the risk profile of South Africa that because there's a huge risk aversion with capital in South Africa that still keeps us from addressing some of those, those challenges. And at the moment, if you want that off the ground type of money, chances are you sort of have to be dealing with government. Mm-hmm. If you want something like that. In the private sector, it's going to be few and far between, or the checks are just going to be ridiculously small.
100%. So, right. I mean, this is stuff that I'm passionate about. You know, we've had these conversations, and like you mentioned, I think one of the issues here though is that when we speak about VC in South Africa and why it's first of all looked a certain way, why it's moved a certain way, is because the entrepreneurial landscape in South Africa really does lack. And we have small businesses in studio every Tuesday. They come in, they speak to us about their businesses, they speak about funding, but the truth of the matter is that when you are an entrepreneur in South Africa, it's just not easy enough. You know, you can register a business in, I think, a day or whatever. So that's quick. You can open the bank account. But to get the business going, to get innovation going, to get the rest of it going, there's just not enough support. And I don't know if that is something that we can rely on government on for too much longer.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
So we'll see how that goes, Mudiyo. We'll talk about that one offline. Let's talk about Elise and close down, Mudiyo. Well, not closing down, but yeah. I think it's important for us to realize that this company has been in operation for 45 years. For a South African company to close doors after 45 years during this very, very difficult macroeconomic environment means that we have largely let, we're losing businesses, we're losing jobs, we're losing livelihoods, yeah? And this company, yeah.
So this one is it was a sad one. You know, when the news came in, there was an announcement to say that Elise Holdings, so you know, will be going into liquidation. The only silver lining that's there is that it's Elise as a holdings company that is folding, but the operating entities, you know, otherwise we're now talking the brand, you know, what we interact with, you know, whether it's plugs, whether it's whatever electronic item you're talking about, power banks, you know, small generators that are actually written Elise, that, you know, part of the business is still continuing, you know, operating under business rescue. Mm-hmm. And that's the case until early May, when we are expecting a business rescue plan to come through. But I have it on good authority that there are a couple of bidders that have been lined up to actually buy up those parts of the business. So hopefully the Ellie's brand, you know, will continue in the market, albeit under different ownership. And more important to me, because one of the things that I've unfortunately had to cover over the years is the massive amount of retrenchments that have had to happen at Ellie's over the years. And hopefully if they can sell the Ellie's brand to another company, and that, you know, continues as an on, as a going concern, then, you know, you at least are able to save jobs. At least that's what we hope, that they'll be able to save the jobs of the people that are working in those operating entities. But as a holding company, Ellie's is no more.
It's a very interesting one also, because what becomes very clear here was that the DSTV satellite dish boom.
That thing was huge.
That was huge.
Yeah, it was huge.
It was huge. And I remember actually they had a program at MultiChoice where you could go and install a little SMME, and you would go and you'd install. And this was all one big value chain. So on the basis of Ellie's, you know, not being able to survive post that boom, are we saying that that whole ecosystem with you are just not making it?
Well, they tried on two fronts to take a similar model and put it in other industries, but it just didn't work out, because the first phase they tried to do, to take their same distribution network and say, okay, fine, instead of just doing DSTV installations, because this is a declining business, we're going to retrain a lot of the small businesses in our ecosystem. Let's retrain those same technicians to now do fiber installations.
Okay.
And I remember there was actually a partnership with Vox that actually happened at some point, but I don't think that yielded the results.
That's helpful.
Because think about it, right? In a country like South Africa, and especially if you think about that satellite dish boom from back in the day, right? In South Africa, DSTV, MultiChoice has about 9 million customers, right? Imagine the number of satellite dishes that had to be installed to make that happen, right? But we are still talking about less than 2.5 million households being covered by fiber. That's covered by fiber, not people that have fiber.
Okay.
People that if Mudiwa wants fiber at his house, there's a line outside of his house that can come in.
Yes,
right.
Yes, yes, yes.
That are covered by fiber. Mm-hmm. So your fiber rates are still small.
Okay.
We haven't experienced that boom.
Yes.
You know, for you to then be able to absorb a whole industry that used to do all the satellite dish stuff into fiber. This didn't work out very well. Then they decided, okay, fine, let's take it into solar. You know, maybe we can, there was the Bundu Power deal. They were going to get a solar business. And, you know, part of the rationale is we have this network. We can also, you know, do solar installations, take advantage. We're an electronics company. There's load shedding. You know, all of the parts were making sense. But the bankers were like,
we're not funding you guys.
We're not funding this thing.
I mean, if we're honest with you, they fought, though.
They did.
And I think maybe that's...
They tried.
They tried. Trying to reinvent themselves. And it'll be interesting maybe to speak to somebody who's was in the executive team there to speak about this journey, what it means to...
Your executive team is left of like one now. I don't know if you saw all the resignations.
The resignations. I did see all of those. Yeah, it's very interesting. But I guess if we still can get access to the products, maybe even... New players, younger players, blacker players, who knows? That is how we wrap up this edition of Power Biz. Mudiwa, always a pleasure having you in studio with our weekly tech wrap. Back with you next week, Friday at 6:30 with Mudiwa Kavaza.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.